The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. As I mentioned last Sunday, today we're going to be talking about the second of the four immeasurables, which is called in Buddhism karuna, compassion. Karuna is one of the aspects of right thought on the Noble Eightfold Path. You have right understanding and then right thought. This term, right thought, does not convey the whole of the meaning in Pali of right, of what is called samasamkappa. We call it right thought. It also means right aspiration, right mindfulness, right ideas, and right resolution. And I want to emphasize that the term right is not used in terms of right and wrong, but right ideas or right resolution as that which leads to the cessation of suffering. If you want to find the cessation of suffering, if you want to walk the Noble Eightfold Path, this is what is right. This is what is good to do. So, coupled hand in hand with metta, karuna is one of the aspects of mind and training which comprise and bring about right thought. It's the way in which you learn how to purify your thoughts and change your way of thinking. And like all things in Buddhism, it's both something which one cultivates and has a practical application of or for in everyday life. Because both metta, loving-kindness, and karuna, compassion, function on the level of thought, one might say, if one were going in a logical, sequential order, that right thought is the first step of action along the Noble Eightfold Path, after we have understood what it is that we are trying to understand. In Buddhism, right understanding means a right understanding of truth, a right understanding of suffering, impermanence, no permanent self, a right understanding of the Noble Eightfold Path, the Four Noble Truths, a right understanding of the teachings. And then we start with that understanding and apply it to thought, how we think. Karuna helps eliminate wrong ideas and thoughts which lead to suffering, as well as aids in the development of pure thoughts. And pure, again, means thoughts that will lead to the cessation of suffering. When my late master was alive, we used to, we meaning I and some of her assistants, used to sit up at night in the wee hours until the wee hours of the morning. She was disabled with diabetes, and was always sick in the morning and had, you know, dizziness and vertigo and nausea and vomiting and everything else. So after the morning was not a very good time for her, but as the day went on and things settled down, she would get on with her work as the abbess of Shasta Abbey and do the things that she needed to do. Late at night, when everyone else had gone to bed, she would sit up. And there would usually be a couple of us, you know, one maybe reading a book, the other sewing, maybe somebody massaging her feet, might have the TV on to listen to the news or something like that. But basically, she'd just be sitting there, very quiet. You know, occasionally we'd chat, you know, this kind of thing, shoot the breeze or talk about things that we needed to do or problems in the temple. Most of the time, she would just sit there, awake, aware, you know, bright-minded. And after this had been going on for some time, I asked her what she did through these sort of long periods of just sitting there. And she would say to me, "I'm training my thoughts." And I found that to be really interesting because I found it hard enough to be training my speech and my body, and I knew what my thoughts were like. But I had never actually met anyone who had an understanding of what to do in order to literally train her thoughts. She would say that it's a quiet and it's a perfect time. The monks are asleep. There's nobody around to bug me unless there's a huge emergency about something. And I can just sit here. As a trained musician, she had this wonderful facility where no matter how much noise there was in the room, she could focus and be perfectly still and quiet. In fact, if she fell asleep in her chair, the first thing that would bring her out of a deep sleep would be people whispering around her. But you could have the TV on, you could have the washing machine next door clattering around, you could be talking, you know, normal voice, and she would just be completely asleep. The moment you begin to whisper, "Huh? What?" Very interesting way. I couldn't have done it. Some of the most impressive decisions of her abbacy were made while she was sitting in front of the television, supposedly watching the news, but in fact just meditating. And I've never met anybody like it who could do that. I know that I cannot. But anyway, this is how she worked on the mechanics of training her thoughts, and she worked on her meditation in this way, noticing where in her thoughts there were places that led to suffering. There were thoughts that would lead to suffering. And simply sitting there, still with them, with compassion and loving kindness, and just letting them go, and letting them go, and letting them go. Being mindful of them, identifying them, just letting them go. Just seeing them. And she did this for hours a day for years, as long as I was her assistant, until time of her death. Even though she was disabled with diabetes and was, as a result, unable to join in morning service and the things that went on here in the monastery very early in the morning, her meditation training continued to grow and was very impressive. She had an incredible memory. Her mind was very accurate in terms of conversations and all sorts of different things. And there were times when you just forgot she was such a sick person. So this working on the thoughts was really doing something. It was really generating results that you could see. Plus the fact that she became more and more still as time goes on. One of the difficulties of teaching right thought is that people can tend to be somewhat leery and afraid of anything that appears to take over their minds, their wills, their ability to choose. And this is a right fear to have. You know, I am very fond of telling people a verse that was given to me by Reverend Master Daiswi, of all people. I can blame it on him. That when you come to religion, you don't give away your BMW. You don't give away your body. You don't give away your money. You don't give away your will. And if anybody ever asks you for your body, your money, or your will, you should get out of there, because you got trouble of some kind or other. I'm not talking about body in the sense of, you know, lending a hand. I'm not talking about money of, you know, making a helpful donation to your church. And I'm not talking about will in terms of the thing that you put your last wishes on. Okay. But remember, in Buddhism, one of the primary principles of practicing the Buddhist way is that this is something that we do ourselves. Nobody does it for us, and nobody does it to us. We're the ones who practice the teaching. We're the ones who choose. We're the ones who choose to train. We're the ones who choose to change our behavior, our speech, and our thoughts. We're the ones who do it, and as soon as we don't want to do it, we don't do it. And if we want to do it again, we do it. It's completely voluntary. There's no brainwashing. There's no mind control. There's nothing in my tradition that would resemble what I believe is called a guided meditation. It would never occur to us to use one, because people meditate for themselves. And they create this. They create their training. They create enlightenment. They discover it for themselves. Nobody does it for them. So keep in mind, when we're talking about compassion in terms of right thought and training one's thoughts, this is the basis for it. Something that we're doing voluntarily, something that we are doing ourselves. And it is something that we are doing actively. There is a way of doing so. There is a method of doing so. And it's nothing esoteric above and beyond doing the meditation practice itself, but being aware of what you are doing while you are doing it. And I hope that our talk on karuna in this way will help you understand what that means. The practice of compassion is the third partner in the group of elements that make up right thought. Each one of these elements works on a certain aspect of thought in order to cleanse it from greed, anger, and delusion. Karuna is particularly applied, well, it's the particular medicine for delusion. For reasons which I'm going to explain to you in a few minutes. Remember, we're talking about metta, loving kindness, and is particularly good in terms of anger. Karuna works very well too, but Karuna's specialty is delusion. Now, the practice of right thought actually begins with the thought of renunciation. Renunciation meaning learning to let go of the attachment to things and to things of sensual pleasures. Now, this does not mean that in order to practice renunciation, you go and sell your house and start sleeping out in a field, or you sell your car, or you get rid of your clothes, or you give away money, or any of that. It means that we begin to let go of stuff, the stuff that we hold on to. And we begin to see it for what it is. It's stuff. It may be useful stuff. It may have a very good purpose. It may be very helpful. But it's stuff. It's our toys. And when we can begin to look at our stuff and our toys in turn with a mind of renunciation, we can begin to let go. And this letting go is really important when it comes to the practice of compassion. Remember, though, don't move out of your house, quit your job, sell your car, get rid of your insurance, etc., etc. But learn to let go of them. It's the voluntary recognition and letting go of attachment to things and cultivating non-attachment. This is renunciation, the mind of renunciation. Now, the second of the three elements of right thought is learning non-enmity. And another good word for non-enmity is metta, loving kindness. And I've just done 4 or 5 talks about metta, the first of the 4 immeasurables. But metta, as I mentioned, is the particular aspect of thought that deals with anger. Anger, enmity, ill will, rage. And there is a sequence that is being set right in front of your eyes, whether you know it or not, of first attachment, renunciation, letting go of greed, then of loving kindness, dealing with anger. Loving kindness, working on goodwill towards everyone without distinction. That is what tames anger. That's what cools it down. It's also what removes the barriers that we construct between ourselves and other people. The third of these three elements, and the third in this chain, is called karuna or avihimsa. Avihimsa is the Pali word for the Sanskrit ahimsa, or nonviolence. Ahimsa is usually translated as nonviolence, but it is really compassion. It means harmlessness, loving kindness, compassion. And as I said earlier, karuna in particular is the medicine for delusion because it means practicing or being harmless, lovingly kind, and in particular, awakening to the sufferings of others. This is the job, so to speak, of karuna. Awakening to the suffering of other beings and doing what is necessary in order to relieve that suffering. The Buddhist model of karuna appears in the previous lives of the Buddha. If you ever read any of his birth stories, where as a bodhisattva, he was selflessly giving himself in all circumstances, in all different manifestations to help any number of beings, right to the point of giving his own body in order to do so, to show the willingness and the selflessness that was there. Now, I do not recommend the giving of your own life in this way, but this is what the previous life stories were trying to teach, this kind of selflessness. Compassion, karuna, means to help or to aid the distressed and forlorn and promote their happiness in every way. And again, you can see a sequence being laid here. If we can let go of our stuff, if we can let go of our toys, those things that we surround ourselves with that we think are so incredibly important, by letting go of them, we can actually learn to be happier. And in that letting go, in that renunciation, the thought or the spirit of metta, loving kindness, begins to arise naturally. This loving kindness suffuses us and we dedicate it towards other people. It's not enough just for me to be happy. I would like other people to be happy too. Yes, may I be happy and free from suffering. May others be happy and free from suffering. And then there is karuna. When they aren't free from suffering, what can I do to help? What can I do to actually help? Help, aid, relieve. Help, aid, relieve suffering. And therein lies a whole area of experience and wisdom which I don't lay any particular claim to having a unique understanding of. What is the best way to relieve human suffering? Well, spiritually, Buddhism teaches what to do. The details of that, working that out in terms of our world and the practical application thereof, that is a solution that everyone has to learn to find together. To help the helpless, that is the practical side of karuna, compassion. The perfection of karuna is to eliminate all forms of cruelty. You have renunciation dealing with stuff, the holding on to the things of the world. You have metta, loving kindness, dealing with ill will, anger, rage, resentment, bitterness. You have karuna to deal with cruelty and to find that which will actually eliminate the suffering of other people. That is the principle, that is the perfection of it. So, as we know, karuna is a fundamental principle of training in Buddhism. If any of you ever saw that movie about that was made about the Dalai Lama, I get them all mixed up. I think it was Kundun. There's a lovely scene about, this was in 7 years in Tibet when they were going to build a movie house. And they couldn't, it was very frustrating for the German climber to get the movie house built because every shovelful of rock had to be sifted to get the earthworms out of it and anything else that happened to be there. So it took much longer than they'd ever hoped for. And the Tibetan community were really stretching to do that because they knew there were other forms of life to be disturbed, and why do something that was going to hurt sentient beings, et cetera, et cetera. But you can see how and why it can work out to have a society based on the fundamental practice of compassion. So it's a fundamental training in Buddhism. And you will see it in all of its aspects. One in particular is the precepts. If you look at the precepts in terms of compassion and go through the precepts in Brahma's net, especially that one, number 5, about not selling the wine of delusion, not engaging in any form of activity that is going to bring harm to other beings. Now that's a tough one. In order to practice karuna, or compassion, for monks, the Buddha said this to them, "Wherefore, O monks, however men may speak concerning you, whether in season or out of season, whether appropriately or inappropriately, whether courteously or rudely, whether wisely or foolishly, whether kindly or maliciously, thus, O monks, must you train yourselves. Unsullied shall our minds remain, neither shall evil words escape our lips. Kind and compassionate ever shall we abide, with hearts harboring no ill will. And we shall enfold those very persons with streams of loving thoughts unfailing. And forth from them proceeding we shall radiate the whole wide world with constant thoughts of loving kindness, ample, expanding, measureless, free from enmity, free from ill will. Thus must you train yourselves." I do not regard this as an easy thing to practice. But that was his teaching to us. Now, remembering what I said at the beginning about right thought, I think that it helps immeasurably to quietly reflect upon those thoughts that we find rolling around in our brains, and to reflect upon how it is that we are able to practice compassion or not practicing it in everyday life. Reverend Master used to suggest to us that the 5 minutes before you go to sleep at night, 5 minutes just after you've gotten into bed, to reflect upon the day and see how you did. What went right, what went wrong, where we need to practice more work in the precepts, in meditation, in loving kindness, where we don't. Well, that part of it went okay. You know, there is a time when thinking is good, and this is the time for doing that, when thinking becomes reflection. And then say, okay, tomorrow I need to work on, you know, this and this and this and this. And I will do that. And then when you get up in the morning, keep that thought in mind before the day begins and begins rolling with its own momentum. reflection of this kind, when one does it, also has to have compassion as its basis. You don't want to sit there and say, okay, you know, here are the 10 screw-ups of the day. You know, but more be able to look at things in a sense of loving kindness and compassion. We know when we are not practicing compassion. We feel it in our own bodies. We know when we're not practicing loving kindness. We know when we're not practicing renunciation. We know that. We can feel it. So simply to recognize that with compassion and loving kindness and begin there to let it go, to relax one's grip. It has to be non-judgmental, just seeing what's there without making a judgment about it. If I am reflecting through the things of the day and I can see there is a spot where, you know, I spoke harshly to someone, it goes through my mind, yes, I spoke harshly to this something, to this person. I don't have to take it a step further. I don't have to say to myself, oh, Echo, you're bad. You are bad to the bone. Okay? You don't have to do that. Just to say, I need not to speak harshly to someone. And to follow that back from where it started. Maybe I was tired, maybe I was upset, maybe this, maybe that, maybe I hadn't eaten, you know. Maybe I was just feeling mean. I don't know. But I have to be able to look at it with no judgment, not looking for my inherent badness, lack of worth, fundamental unkindness, or no disrespect to insects. Sense of heart as, you know, big as an insect. To not look down on oneself, but to simply look. Look for where it is and say, here, this is the place to practice the teaching. That's all one has to do. And to refrain from indulgence in the rest of it. When one recognizes thoughts, words, or acts of anger, or cruelty towards others, all we really need to do is accept them, hopefully with some remorse, and make a sincere wish to do better. And then try to live in such a way as to manifest that. You might not get it right the first time, you might not get it right the second time, or the third, or the fifth, or the tenth. But if you keep trying, something's going to happen. Something's got to give. And it goes in the right direction. The practice of meditation and the keeping of the precepts helps a lot with the practice of compassion. Meditation, because of the stillness and the mindfulness. The precepts, out of the sense of, first of restraint, and then, what do I do here? What's good to do? What's good to do that will be compassionate and expressive of loving kindness? When cruelty arises, recognize it with mindfulness and loving kindness, but especially, and here is where we're back to our sequence. Every form of cruelty begins with desire. I want something. And I want it bad. And if I don't get it, I'm going to get mad. And if I don't get it, and I get mad, I'm going to get mad at somebody. I'm either going to get mad at me, or I'm going to get mad at somebody else. I'm going to be cruel. So we need to recognize the end product, the cruelty, but get back through mindfulness and awareness to the basis of it. What do I want? What do I want? What am I expecting? What am I requiring? What am I demanding? Because if I can see that clearly, I'm going to understand why I'm getting angry. And I'm also going to understand what makes me uncompassionate or cruel to other beings, whether those other beings are just myself or to others. It's there. It's there in the I want, I must have. One definition of delusion in Buddhism is that delusion is the belief in anything that makes us forget to be compassionate to other living things. If you look through any kind of history into these huge acts of cruelty that have been perpetrated, you will see at the very beginning of them somebody deciding, it really ought to be this way. You know, I really want it this way. It would be, the world would be so much better, so much happier if this happened. And then as a result, all these people get killed. What does the person, the people, want? Usually it actually has an element of something that's very pure. I want, you know, love, or I want truth, or I want purity. You know, I want my neighborhood to be safe. I want my neighborhood to be safe. I'm going to carry a gun. I want safety, and I'll shoot anybody who gets in my way. We do this all the time without looking at the insanity of it. Or we just simply take the insanity for granted. The world of birth and death, it's not the most sane place. There is a lot of goodness. It is also the fundamental place where the Buddhist teaching is practiced and comes from. And yet there's a lot of craziness to it too. And that craziness begins in the I want, I desire, I must have. If I don't get, boy, am I mad. And if I'm mad, somebody's going to pay for it. Greed, anger, delusion, ignorance. So this is why the basis of right thought is renunciation. To let go of my stuff a little bit. Loving kindness, compassion. Well, what can I do about my street? Maybe I don't have to carry a gun. Maybe I can do something else. Maybe we can all do something else to respond to the matter at hand in a way that is compassionate, that will relieve the suffering of living beings and not add to that suffering. And in order to do that, unfortunately, what we basically have to do is to train ourselves to be enlightened, individually and collectively. So we might as well just start right here. Here we are. Is this as good as it gets? No. This is where it starts, though, which ought to be both joyful and terrifying at the same time. Delusion, the belief in that which makes us forget or ignore compassion for other beings. Now, those of you who really love other people and work with them, those of you who really love animals and work with them, or try to rescue them, those of you who really love nature and the environment and work with it, you all know what this means. But you also have to remember that even the person with a deep love, and especially the person with the deep love, has to practice renunciation, loving kindness, and compassion. Because if you don't, in the face of the greed, anger, and delusion that exists in the world of birth and death, you are going to become a carbon copy of it. Unless you practice renunciation, loving kindness, compassion. Somebody's going to cut this tree down. You know, pipe bomb. It makes perfect sense. Or does it? It's insane. It is insane because it completely leaves out of context the living beings, all the living beings. I've got a perfect idea. We'll save the trees by destroying the people. It makes sense. It's crazy. Finding wise ways of helping beings. Finding compassionate ways to help everybody. Means we have to learn to let go of the luxury of disagreeing and work towards harmony and agreement for everyone's sake. I'll get off my soapbox now. In the face of those things which do harm to the things we love, we can ourselves become the very thing that does so much damage to self and other. That is why it is always necessary to practice these teachings. Otherwise, you just turn into the very thing that you can't stand. Greed is greed, anger is anger, cruelty is cruelty, and ignorance is ignorance. These things are exactly what they are. No. And the person who is really dedicated to compassion has to train him or herself very deeply to learn to become as the bodhisattva who works in the waveless sea of birth and death, the kinds you read about in the scriptures, who answers the calls of help from every quarter, yet still remains compassionate and unmoved in the face of greed, anger, and delusion. Yes, it is very sad. Yes, it is a great waste. Yes, it is deeply cruel. But one has to either be part of the problem or the solution. And meeting these things with the very things themselves that we decry, trying to deal with greed, hate, and delusion via greed, hate, and delusion, in the long run, doesn't work. Renunciation, loving kindness, compassion, wise ways of helping beings. Good luck.